Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Straight from the Source, streaming to you on the Heritage Radio Network at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, this and every Wednesday afternoon. My name is Clay Gordon, and in the nearly 20 years that I've been following the chocolate industry, literally from tree to mouth, I visited cacao farms throughout the Americas and spent time with farmers, cacao merchants, cocoa merchants, right, and some of the best chocolate makers. Growing cacao is very hard work, and it's hard not to notice that farmers are often not paid fairly for the work that they do. Straight from the Source is inspired by those experiences with a mission of exploring issues in fair and ethical sourcing cacao, chocolate, coffee, and other foods with participants involved in every link of the supply chain, from growers to producers to chefs, certification bodies, and organizations interested in the concept of promoting the concept of good food. Today's topic is tasting chocolate, and my guest is Aaron Fairbanks, who is the executive director of Heritage Radio Network. Aaron, thanks for coming along and joining me today.
Thanks for having me on such a tasty show.
You know, it's always good to be able to bring the people who are responsible for making sure that the network stays alive and stays viable, and involve them in all aspects of what I think the hosts are doing. You know, it's something to be in the office and sort of know what's going on, but to be here and to be an integral part of it and to share what it is that I know after you've shared, you know, all the things that you've been doing, I think is a wonderful idea. Now, you described yourself as a sophisticated chocolate lover. I mean, what does that all mean? What does sophisticated mean?
I think sophisticated means that I have self-educated and done a little bit of professional education around chocolate. I've tasted a lot of chocolate. I've had kind of the luxury of working for a specialty food retailer called Zingerman's in the Midwest for a few years. And one of the bonuses of working for such an organization is that they have a ample sample stash that I made frequent use of. Back in my Zingerman's days, it would be rare to find me without a bar of artisanal chocolate, and I got really into tasting different single origin varieties and comparing those varieties across years. I've had the benefit of being able to visit one of the Miquel Cluzel chocolate plantations in the Dominican Republic, and that was really interesting. Exactly, yeah. Los Ancones. And so I have to say that my budget currently minimizes my chocolate consumption at this point. I'm down to, you know, more like a bar a week than a bar. more frequently than that. And so I do miss being able to be in an environment where so much chocolate is kind of just at my fingertips and I can do a lot of comparison. But I'd say it's armed me well to talk and think about the product.
Well, you covered a lot of different things there, and a really important one was this notion of comparison. So one of the things that I've noticed, you know, when I started this 12 years ago, I was making it all up. How does one become a professional chocolate critic? There's no place to go to school, like if you want to go to school to become a sommelier. And so I had to develop a bunch of techniques that I could use to help develop my palate. And 2 weeks ago, we looked at one of them with the beer pairing that we did with Patrick Martins and Sean McCain of Bronx Brewery, where we had one beer and three chocolates, then three beers and one chocolate, and you can see how the flavors interact with each other. And what we're going to be doing today is the other basic exercise that I put together, which recognizes the fact that people usually aren't very good at just putting something in their mouth and being able to pull the flavors out of them. What are the flavors that are in this thing? Unless they have a lot of experience. And that's the whole idea. The more experience you have, the easier it is to be able to recognize what it is that you've been tasting, go, oh, you know, what does dried fig taste like in chocolate? Well, until somebody identifies that flavor for you, it's really hard to pull out. And so I've developed a technique, which I talk about in my book, Discover Chocolate, called pyramid tasting. And what we've done is we've created on a piece of paper a really simple pyramid, and across the bottom of the pyramid, we put four chocolates. And it really doesn't matter what those four chocolates are, okay? But what I've done is I've themed them so that all the chocolates are 70% dark chocolates. So it could be 70% dark chocolates, or all chocolate from the same origin, or all chocolate from the same manufacturer, or all chocolate from the same country. It doesn't really matter, as long as there is a theme and you're comparing things that are sort of alike, right? And so the basic technique is you pick up the first two chocolates from the bottom of the pyramid. We have chocolate in square one and chocolate in square two. So if you do that for me now, and Jack, the engineer, is following along from the booth today. I think we got great. So we got
tough three, work if you can get it.
You know, it's one of the perks of being an engineer involved. So we have two chocolates, all right? And yeah, what you want to do is you want to smell the two, and what you want to do is you want to talk about or think about the differences between the two. So what you do is you say, rather than saying this one is okay, it's got a strong roasty flavor, what you want to do is you want to say chocolate one has got a stronger aroma than chocolate two. And I think you'd agree that chocolate one has a stronger aroma than chocolate two.
Yeah, much more like saccharine sweet aroma.
Okay. And then you'll go, are there any other flavors? Does it smell sweeter? Does it smell like there's more vanilla or less vanilla? And so you're comparing and contrasting. And the important thing when you do this is that you have a little notebook by your side. And what you do is you write down in column one the name of the chocolate, and in column two the name of the second chocolate, and then you write down the comparisons. Sweeter, more vanilla, more roasty, stronger aroma, less strong aroma. So what you're doing is you're focusing on comparing and contrasting. And you want to work from more general impressions to more specific impressions. So you're not really trying to identify, oh, I smell wood smoke in it, and then you're going, well, is it oak or cherry? Right? It's just, oh, it smells smoky. Right? And so do that. So after we do that, we're just going to put some in our mouth.
Does it matter if I start with number one or number two?
Absolutely. Start with one.
Okay.
Right? And you chomp on it a little bit to get the melting process started.
You can tell that Clay's chomping because I can hear it in my mic or my headphone.
Well, I'll move it back from the mic.
Demonstrating the proper technique.
That's right. And then let the chocolate melt on your tongue. And what you're trying to do, as I've said in other programs about tasting, is the difference between tasting and eating is you try to develop a taste memory, that you're paying conscious attention to the sensations. What is it? What are the flavors? What are the aromas? And then you, right, once the first chocolate is cleared from your mouth, right, without doing any kind of palate cleansing, taste the second chocolate.
Why don't you do any kind of palate cleansing?
When you start off, that time difference is huge. You'll put something in your mouth, and it could be cold water, it could be something like that, and it will affect your ability to taste the second chocolate. And now what you do is, what is the difference in taste? Is one fruitier than another? Is one sweeter than another? Do you like the texture of one better than another? Is one creamier? So in my estimation, the first chocolate here, which is lint 70%, anybody can go to, you know, any decent store, pretty much anywhere in the United States, and pick up the lint 70%. It was lighter and sweeter. It had a creamier texture, almost like a milk chocolate, even though there's no milk in it, right? And the second chocolate, which is the Scharfenberger 70%, had a little bit of fruit, a little more complexity, and a much stronger roasty note. And so I would say fruitier, sweeter, right, roastier in the columns, right, in my notebook. And then what you do is you say, of the two of these chocolates, which one do I like the best, right? So you don't have to have any. So I normally say is, if you had to put money and buy a bar of this, of the two bars, which would you more likely to put, assuming they were the same price and, you know, it wasn't an issue, which one would you be more likely to purchase?
I would purchase number two.
Okay, then so put number two at the next level of the pyramid and leave that here. So now if you want to, you can do a little palate cleansing. So here's some water.
I wanted to ask you about that because one of the things I've always noticed drinking or eating chocolate is because it's so temperature sensitive that I have such a different experience. I don't like having cold water before I taste the chocolate because then I feel like it takes me longer to taste it. But I mean, I know with other things as you're eating, you know, you'll have a saltine or there's different
Right.
Is there an ideal kind of palate cleanser for chocolate?
There is, as a matter of fact, and it's a weird one. It's room temperature soupy polenta. this is something I learned during the International Chocolate Awards judging, which was here in New York about a month ago. Yeah, they've come up with the polenta. So it's room temperature, so it's not going to affect the temperature of your mouth. But it's got this fabulous texture, and it's incredibly bland. You know, if you really wanted to do it, use white grits, right, rather than yellow grits. But yeah, what you want to do is the blander the better. And it has this wonderful texture and just pulls the fat off your mouth.
Huh.
Now, if you don't want to use that, you can use room temperature seltzer. Again, important, room temperature. Or we also like to use matcha tea, green tea.
Oh, I love matcha.
Because it has a lot of tannins, and it will, again, pull the fat off your tongue. But then you have to follow the tea with a little bit of water in order to get the taste of tea out of your mouth.
And one more question before we move on. Of course. Is there like your pyramid that we're sitting in front of here has four different chocolates. Mm-hmm. Is that like an ideal amount to try in one sitting? I mean, is there a limit to a sitting, or is there a recommended, if I really wanted to start exploring comparative chocolate tasting, I should start with four bars at a time, or can I do eight, or is it better to do two? What do you think?
Well, with two, you're not getting... We'll get to the next part of this, all right? Two is not enough, and eight is just way too many. Because the experience that we have, myself and the people who do judging of chocolate formally, says that you can do no more than 15 tastings before your palate becomes unreliable. And that's only if after a certain number of tastings, what you do is you have a reference chocolate,
mm-hmm.
and you go through tastings, you eat the reference chocolate, and then you say, how does my perception of this chocolate change from how it was do I start?
Got
right,
it.
And after every, so you just recalibrate, and it's routinely after about somewhere between 10 to 20, depending on how experienced you are, all of a sudden you're no longer tasting things straight.
Do you think Jack is just eating chocolate next door?
No, I see him typing notes, okay. So he's probably in there, just, you know, whatever it is he's tagging and transcribing and, you know, all the things that engineers do here on Heritage Radio Network.
How does tagging and transcribing change your taste perception?
Well, you're probably not paying 100% attention to the chocolate, so back and forth, so, you know, you may not be as deep in your ascertainment of the nuances of what it is that you're tasting, but that's about it. Yeah, no, it's important. I mean, a couple of things. You want to bring, if you do this on a regular basis, you want to do it at the same time of day,
mm-hmm.
right? You want to make sure that you've cleaned your mouth and you don't have anything strongly flavored for at least a couple of hours before you do this. And the most important thing to bring to a chocolate tasting other than chocolate is a sense of humor. I mean, you can take the chocolate seriously, but don't take yourself seriously.
Got it.
I mean, it's just chocolate in the end. I mean, this is not all about geeking out, and maybe it is, but it's all about having fun. So let's do this with the next two chocolates. So the third chocolate is from Green and Blacks. It's their 70%. And so we're going to, again, it's this comparison and contrast, Aaron. You just don't go ahead and eat it.
I took a bite. I totally screwed up.
It's all right. It's okay. There's no wrong way to do this. It's just faster and slower. But again, what you want to do is smell the two. You know, how are they different?
Oh,
comparing and contrasting, right?
Number four has such a peculiar odor.
Four is weird.
Right. Yes, it's got also a very interesting taste. I've used this before on the mm-hmm. show, and when we taste it, you'll get to it. It's very, very strange. But, you know, how are they different? So number three is the Green and Black, 70%. Number four is the Endangered Species, 70%. Go back and forth between the two. Right. And again, you have a notebook and you're writing these down. Okay. So you taste chocolate number three. Sit back from the mic so you can't hear me chew. So this is really hard because I always hear myself chew because I'm always got...
Something in your mouth?
Yes.
You're Aaron. Such a professional. Always working. Clay is always working.
Right. But I can always hear myself chew because it's my chewing I'm doing. All right. And then try the second one. And they really are quite remarkably, this is a problem, I need to talk and chew at the same time. They're very remarkably different. The first one has fruitier, But the second one has all these cooked sugar. It was what it is. It's cooked sugar flavors. So it's not necessarily sweeter, but it tastes more like caramel. It tastes more like marshmallow. It tastes more like, right?
Pineapple is what I'm getting.
Right. As opposed to, oh, wow. Absolutely. Just boom. Mm-hmm. This burst of pineapple in there. That was weird.
Yeah.
It just came and went.
It's very active on your palate.
Right. Right. Oh, wow. It's a very long finish, and it's really interesting. So you write these notes down, and then say to yourself, ooh, if I had to buy these, if I had the choice of these two chocolates, which one would I like? Which one would I buy?
See, I don't know. Four is, like, very common, like, much more, there's much more going on than any of the other chocolates I've tasted, mm-hmm. but I don't know if I like everything that's going on as okay. much. So I might go for...
Number three.
Number three.
That's fine.
Is it weird that number four tastes like a daiquiri to me?
Yeah. No, that's like pina colada, right?
Well, no, I wouldn't call it weird. It's just not something you've normally experienced before in chocolate. And, yeah. you know, until you experience, you know, what do you know? So the next thing is, what we notice now is that we have two chocolates in the second level of the pyramid. We do a little palate cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
And now what we do is we compare and contrast those two chocolates. All right. So Aaron is jumping right into this right now. Again.
I'm just going to smell. I'm going to follow the rules.
Thank you. Right. Are you doing that in there, Jack?
Yes, I'm smelling.
Okay. And so they're very different. Okay. But they're different because you're comparing different things. Your perception of them is going to be different than the first combination.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because it's like putting salt on something affects it, or putting an herb on something affects it. And sometimes it's not always possible to tell how it's going to affect something, because the level of sweetness will kick something up or hide something, or the level of sourness will, you know, accentuate something. So it's really quite interesting how this notion of comparison and contrast can really alter your perception of the flavor. Right.
Can I eat it?
Now you can eat it.
I think the other thing that is interesting and impacting my experience of these chocolates is they're all slightly different forms.
Right.
The thickness level and like the amount I get from like a bite is kind of different between right. them.
That does have an effect. So the thicker a chocolate, the thicker a bar of chocolate is, if you were to have exactly the same chocolate in two different thicknesses, the thicker bar would seem firmer and mm-hmm. would not have as soft a melt on it, even though it's exactly the same chocolate. So, yeah. So one of the things that professional chocolate tasters have to think about when they think about texture is, how is the size of the sample that I'm working with? How does it affect my perception of it? So we're not going to go through the how are these two chocolates different from each other, because we're running to the end of the first part of the program. But the idea again here is, you say, of these two, which one would I prefer? Right, if I had to buy one of them.
I think I'm going with the Scharfenberger.
Okay, that would be number two.
Number two, yeah.
So you put that at the top of the pyramid, and then you put the chocolate that made it to the second level back to the bottom of the pyramid. So you've written this down, all right, in your notebook. Now put the first one, the Scharfenberger, which made it to the top mm-hmm. of the pyramid, put it back in position two. Right. Now play musical chairs. Take chocolate number four and put it where number one is, and move everything over to the right. No. Yep. Yep. So what the chocolate that was in position one is now in position two. The one that's in position two is now in position three. Right. Now run the pyramid again.
Oh, man.
Okay.
I eat too much.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to do it right away. But, you know, this is not something you normally start this knowing you were going to run this multiple times, which is why the number four is a good number. You run this through. So you end up with three tasting each pyramid. You run it through three times. You've got nine tastes. That's a good thing. So you run this through three times. And after you look at your notebook, all right, it's often the case where you'll put a different chocolate at the top of the pyramid each time.
Wow, really?
I mean, yeah, because your sense of the chocolate is very, very different each time. It is really quite remarkable how this works. And it's very, very simple. And it's why you want to limit yourself to roughly four tastes at a time. So that's the first half of the program, where we've been looking at the tasting pyramid. We're going to take a short break from learning about the tasting pyramid. And when we return to Straight from the Source on Heritage Radio Network, we're going to be examining some of the reasons why this phenomenon works, and actually go back to last week's topic, which was how to read a label.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Clay Gordon, creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com and author of the IACP finalist book, Discover Chocolate. Today, we've been talking about tasting chocolate, specifically about a technique I developed to help me develop my palate called the tasting pyramid. And the tasting pyramid, you put four different chocolates on the base of a pyramid. You do comparison and contrast between those chocolates. You choose a favorite among each pair of chocolates. You move it up the pyramid until you find a chocolate that is your favorite. Then you rearrange the base of the pyramid. You do it all over again. And very, very quickly, you do four or five of these pyramids and different styles of chocolate. And very, very quickly, you can come to a point where you can understand what it is you like about a particular chocolate. So you heard Aaron say, ooh, this is a very, very interesting chocolate, but I don't necessarily know that I like everything that's going on. All right, I have a chocolate which is not as complex in the other chocolate, but I prefer that. If you write it down and you start reading your notes and paying attention to the way you react to chocolate that you're eating and the flavors and sensations that you get in the mouth, you can pretty much very, very quickly say, you know, I like chocolate that has a lot of stuff going on in it. Or, you know, I really do like chocolate that is very, very smooth and it's got a particular kind of flavor, or it doesn't surprise me. You know, whatever they are, I mean, they're your impressions. You know, your sense of taste is your sense of taste. Your sense of smell is your sense of smell. The answer that's right for you is your answer, not someone else's answer. And the tasting pyramid is a technique that you can use not just for chocolate, but for almost any food. I was talking before we went on the air, and Jack, the engineer, looked at this food and said, boy, I would love to do this with four bourbons. Or it could be bourbons. It could be charcuterie of some sort or another. You could do four Pinot Noirs, wines. You could do almost anything. The same technique can be used to help you understand, ooh, what it is that I'm tasting by using comparison in contrast.
Are there any foods or drinks that would not lend themselves to this format?
You know, I haven't run across one yet. As you asked that question, I was saying, could you do it with vinegars? And the answer is absolutely yes. Could you do it with olive oils? Because they're radically different. The answer is yes. Can you do it with finishing salts? I mean, I think your palate would get really tired really, really quickly with a finishing salt if you tried to do something. And I think that's where the difference come in. I might be able to do the entire pyramid through a full cycle in chocolate. I could probably do it in a couple of other food, wines, certainly beers, certainly not a problem. But I think something, salt would be really difficult. Scotch, you know, it might be hard to do some foods. But I think the basic technique works for pretty much anything that you might want to learn how to appreciate. But that's a very, very good question. And the principle behind this is what's called simultaneous contrast. I am a graduate of the Rhode Island School of Design, studied photography, and one of the things that we studied at school in graphic arts class was the whole concept of Joseph Albers color field studies. And we would sit there with paints and paper and specially designed stuff, and you'd create these elaborate color constructions which had very, very faint differences in color. But very, very quickly you understand that even very small differences in color will affect your perception of the colors that are in front of you. And that's exactly what's happening here with the chocolate. Your aroma, what aroma you're smelling next to another aroma, affects your perception of those aromas. What chocolate you're tasting next to another chocolate affects your perception of the taste. So I can have two chocolates, have one perception, take two very different chocolates, right, or substitute one chocolate for one of the two chocolates in that pairing, and my perception of the first chocolate will change. And we're relying on this principle of simultaneous contrast when we're doing this comparison technique to be able to help us understand very, very quickly what it is that we like about the chocolate that we're liking, or about the wine or beer or whatever food you are thinking about. And it's a very, very simple technique. Now, one of the great things about the techniques is it is a great party game. You can sit down, you can very, very quickly whip up one of these pyramid tasting sheets in some sort of word processing program, put it out in front of everybody, put samples down for whatever it is. And if you get the more people you get around the table, you know, 8, 10, 12, it's all fun sitting down and talking about what they smell and what their perceptions are and what their taste and what the differences are. I mean, it really does help you understand just the range of perceptions that different people can have to the same food. And having somebody say, ooh, I didn't really think about it, but having Aaron say pineapple, right? Went, oh man, you know, yeah, that's exactly what it is that I'm tasting here. So having other people in the room with you as you're doing this is a game. As I say, it's a lot of fun to be able to do this as a game. It's one of the reasons why I like to teach it and use this technique in groups of large people, because it helps people identify flavors in ways that they hadn't before. Pineapple and chocolate is a very, very distinct flavor that's different from, you know, is it dried pineapple? Is it fresh pineapple? Is it canned pineapple? There are lots of different kinds of pineapple out there in the world, the kinds of flavor. And being able to identify them is often not all that easy. And this is a great way to go about doing it. And as I've mentioned on previous programs, it's not necessary to be a super taster in order to be able to do this and enjoy it and do it well. What you're doing is you're building a taste memory, a memory bank of all of the flavors that you taste. And it's the ability to taste something and go, oh, that's what that flavor is. To be able to identify your tasting, which is what differentiates people who are really good at this from people who are not paying attention. And it is one of the salient characteristics of excellent chefs, whether they're savory chefs or pastry chefs or mixologists, whatever they are. What they've got is they've got this fabulous memory bank of flavors, and they can just close their eyes and just imagine what a flavor is, remember what that flavor is, and then take another flavor and remember what that flavor is, and then put the two together and go, you know, that flavor combination, it's going to work or it's not going to work. Right. And I have to thank Albert Audria, Farron Audria's brother, for leading me to that revelation. I was very, very fortunate a bunch of years ago to be able to sit in on a class that he gave. Very enigmatic class. His English is not very good. The translator was excellent, but it was him talking about his ability to recognize flavors and the other people who are sitting in the class not really understanding what it all meant, that said, oh, to me, I mean, you know, this is one of the things that separates people who are chefs, tasters, sommeliers, whether they're working with wine or whatever it is they're working with. It's experience and taste memory. And the pyramid tasting technique is one of the best I've ever run across for being able to very, very quickly and in a controlled way help you understand what it is that you're tasting and what it is that you like about the chocolate that you like to eat. Now, one really quick note. Last week when we were talking about reading labels, I said, you know, people tend to read a label and then never come back to look at that label. And you come back a couple of little while later and you go, man, I mean, the ingredients have changed. And you need to be careful, especially if you have some sort of food allergy or sensitivity to basically, you know, every time you pick up something, read the label and make sure the ingredients haven't changed. And so one of the chocolates that I used last week was the Green and Black's Dark 70%. And it was made in Canada. And I noticed today, as I was breaking up the bars, that the one that I'm using today was made in Poland. Wow. I mean, so one of the comments I made about different organic certifiers probably doesn't mean the same thing if this chocolate was made in Poland as opposed to the one that I tasted last week, which was made in Canada. But also, the ingredients list is different in this chocolate. There was whole milk powder or in the dark chocolate from Green and Black last week, and there's no milk in this chocolate. So it is a very different tasting chocolate from what I thought was exactly the same chocolate, a 70% of Green and Blacks, from the one that I tasted last week. So a good reason when you're picking up a bar of chocolate or any other food that you're looking for is to read the label and make sure that They're buying it from the same place, or it's not gray market. It's not. It's coming in from, you know, the United States as opposed to Mexico. People who are into soft drinks know that if you make something with cane sugar as opposed to high fructose corn syrup, it's a very, very different taste. So it makes a great deal of sense to go in and take a look at the label and say, ooh, is it the same that I remember it the last time I ate it? And if it's not, is the change of ingredients going to have a marked effect on the taste of what it is that I'm eating? And that's all for today's program. We've been talking about the pyramid tasting technique, which is, you know, used in chocolate, and I've used it for a bunch of other foods, and I recommend that you have fun with it and figure out a way to incorporate it into some sort of social event. With chocolate, it's also something you can involve your kids in, which is great, which you can't do for many other kinds of food. And we talked a little bit about the importance, going back to last week, of reading a label and what that means for you. I got to thank Aaron Fairbanks, the executive director of Heritage Radio Network, for being my guest this week, as well as to Jack Inslee, the engineer, for not only engineering today's show, but for chiming in and adding his 2 or 3 cents worth with inflation. And I've got to thank the rest of the Heritage Foods USA team and the Heritage Radio Network team for their hard work building, maintaining, and growing Heritage Radio Network. Straight from the Source comes to you live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. And if you have any questions you'd like to hear answered on future programs, call 718-497-2128. Email the show at info@heritageradionetwork.org or contact me, Clay Gordon, through thechocolatelife.com. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Heritage Radio Network is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.